Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Very, very excited today for the show today. With us today, we have Zane Jaffer, and he is a partner in Bluefield Capital. They invest in real estate. They invest in tech. They invest in prop tech. These guys are all over the place. And Zane is actually a very experienced, knowledgeable investor. He understands prop tech to the core. And I'm so excited to the conversation today. Zane, thank you so much for being with us today.
Excited to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
No problem. My pleasure. My pleasure. And I'm looking forward to this conversation. You know, before we even start getting into it, if you could give us a 2-minute elevator pitch about Bluefield Capital. Tell us about the company.
Yeah, and yourself. I'll start with myself and then we can lead into Bluefield. I've been a tech founder for many years across many startups. I had a big exit in 2019 where my company Vongol was acquired by Blackstone for $780 million in an all-cash transaction. So after that exit, I was sitting with a lot of cash and I wanted to diversify out of tech because your entire net worth is in one illiquid startup stock. And I decided to invest in real estate. And after doing a lot of projects myself, everything from loans and some construction, multifamily, single family, I was a LP, I was a co-GP in projects. I decided to team up with a larger firm and that's how I came across Bluefield. And I really liked Bluefield because they produced very high returns. And to this day, the returns are still very high. You know, we're talking in the 30% plus IRR range for well over a decade now. And that return has been generated across multiple asset classes across the US. Some, you know, built to rent, garden style townhomes, multifamily apartments, hotels, senior care facilities, industrial warehouses, some land development. As you said, all over the place, you know, I thought it's a great platform to get good exposure to. And as I joined the principal side, I got that itch because I'm a founder at heart. So we set up a VC fund, a prop tech venture capital fund that's now invested in over 20 prop tech startups at the seed stages.
Beautiful. You gave us so much material to talk about. I can't wait. Let's go back in time. I love to say get into the DeLorean. Go back in time and let's talk about Zane. When Zane started up, when you got into this, you got into the business world. How'd you get into this whole thing?
I grew up in what I would say was a rough neighborhood in the UK. My parents were immigrants from East Africa. And to stay out of trouble, I would spend my time either playing video games or playing games in a way to make money. By that, I mean coming up with business ideas. So I was doing a bit of programming and I figured out how SEO works. I did a bit of full stack stuff like design. And I was building websites. And in my teenage years, I would say I hit puberty pretty quickly. And so my voice became deeper and that allowed me to pick up that phone and start calling people. So I'd pick up the Yellow Pages and I'd call people and I would convince them that, you know, the world is going digital. If someone finds you, they're going to look for you online. You don't have a website and I'm local. I cannot meet you, Obviously, because that you know they don't want to be. I don't want them to number 13, right? At the time, but I could get your website built cheaper than anyone else, and that's how I started out. That was my first exposure to business, and then I figured out you could hire someone in India at the time for very little, and I figured all I need is one or two jobs, which should take you know half a day's work, and that pays that person's salary in India now. For the other 20 plus days, that's high ROI, high margin there. And so I decided to work on my side projects whilst I was also making money building websites for other people. And that's how I just came to experiment and test different startup ideas and websites.
Beautiful idea. Tell me something. At that point, okay, that was when you were 13, you started on the tech side, and then you come, how do you get to the States, by the way? At what point you got to America?
You know, I was struggling to raise venture capital funding in the UK. At that time, people wanted a business that had no risk. And by the time you need venture capital, or by the time venture capital is ready to invest in you, you don't need it, right? And so I figured there's all these investors in the US that invest pre-revenue. I gotta get a piece of that. And so I came out to the US and I started pitching angel investors and I got accepted into a startup incubator. That was my golden ticket to the US. And that's when I raised $2 million for a pre-seed round, which was probably one of the biggest pre-seed rounds at the time. Raised it just on a deck back in 2011. And that became the company that ultimately, you know, had a big exit.
Well, what's her name?
Bungle, that was a startup I created, and that was the culmination of going through an incubator in the US. An incubator is very much like, you know, Y Combinator where
Yeah, of
you
course.
yeah, but just for your listeners, right? You really at that point you still don't know what you're doing, but you work with mentors and they get you ready for a big pitch, a presentation, a demo day. And that was a very successful demo day for us.
Amazing story. Truly amazing story. So, at that point, you became an investor in 2011 when you pitched that first pitch and you got that $2 million, the pre-seed, or you continued developing the company.
Yeah, I continued developing the company. I only became an investor primarily with my own money through my family office once I sold my company.
Got it. Was
Yeah.
so, and when did that happen?
That happened in 2019.
Okay, so you had a
Well,
good 2 years to do. Yeah.
transactions took a long time, but you know, the cash in my I counted as when cash hit my bank account, and
Right.
I was shocked at the level of cash, right? Like this one was like, okay, this is real now, you know.
Beautiful. I love that story. Not only inspirational on the tech level, but inspirational on a personal level to many people who are growing up in tough places. And you could show it just shows that when you have innovation, when you have a good, you put your mind in the right place, you need some luck, but you need to have the right drive, the right idea, the right focus, you get to the right place. I love the story. So fast forward, you become an investor, you sell the company, and you have a little family office of your own. What's next?
Yeah, when you have a mission-driven company for a decade, you know, I'd done startups before that, right? So in that decade, there were other companies too. You have a really good sense of purpose, and you're always busy. And suddenly, when you switch and you've got nothing to do now but retirement, right, and investing, you lack a purpose. And the temptation is, you as a founder and a CEO, you're so used to fighting fire drills. You're so used to existential threats and crisis that you kind of miss that. And you don't want to take that approach with you when you're investing, you know? And so I think initially I was looking for very high yield and riskier projects. And I think it took a lot of mentorship, talking to other founders who had sold their companies, talking to bankers, talking to wealth managers, just learning how people diversify and realizing, okay, I really need to create a carefully thought out diversification strategy where, you know, you will have traditional assets and then you'll have alternative and risk assets. And took a while to understand that. And then I started deploying capital based on the strategy that I came up with. And of course, you'll always change your strategy a little bit. And you'll have to do that probably when the market changes or every 6 to 12 months. but you don't want to make major changes. You know, there's parallels, right? When you're managing such a large amount of money for the first time, it's sort of like creating a startup. You're trying to find product market fit.
Right.
Initially, you're making big pivots, and then you start to make smaller and smaller pivots, and then you refine your strategy. Now your pivots are 5-10% degrees. They're not complete U-turns, and U-turns are
Right.
different dimensions even, right? 360,
Absolutely.
720 degree turns even.
So at that point, you're becoming a small, I would say, investor or a medium-sized investor, and then you're growing with that. And then you said that at a certain point you started going toward the real estate end.
Yeah.
How was that? I'll explain what my question is. I'm asking
Well,
question. At this question I'm asking is on two levels. One level is on the idea level, on the concept level. I am a startup guy. I'm a tech guy. I'm going to real estate on that level. That's one question I have. How did that feel, to do that switch, to do that thing? And the second level is the knowledge base. Real estate is a different knowledge base. You need to understand the processes, the underwriting, the real estate cultural part of it, the cultural part of investing in real estate. Tell us a little bit about those two aspects, please.
yeah, I'll probably give you a lengthier answer so I can just address both of those. I felt that I needed exposure to real estate because when you study how people make their money, there are so many millionaires that have come from real estate. And from the other side, it looks quite easy. It's like a lot of these people that they don't have the highest IQ, but they work quite hard. They're good talkers for sure, right? That's a common trait I see. But I thought to myself, I don't get it. I'm here building a startup and I'm not even taking the salary for many years. I risk getting nothing in the end of this. And here are some real estate folks. They're just throwing darts against every deal. It's not even their own money. They're taking these big returns and everything keeps appreciating and they keep getting income. And then when they get the income, they can do depreciation, tax write-offs. They can do 1031 exchanges. I'm like, what is this black magic? Like,
Right.
I got to,
And never
I
ending. You got tax credit segregation, you got 1031s, you got everything.
So I felt I want that. I want that security and I want something that can produce income but also has the chance to appreciate. And there's leverage because if you finance a deal appropriately, you can really increase your returns. And so that's what attracted me to real estate. The second part of your question was around, I'd say, the psychological shift. I'll give you one anecdote, right? As a VC investor and as a startup founder, you really trust people from the beginning and you believe in people's vision. When someone gives you a financial forecast, you tear it up. It's not relevant. How can you possibly predict where the startup's going to be in a year? You can control the cost side, but
Right.
frankly, you forget the 5-10 year plan. I want to hear your vision and I want to take a bet on your hustle, right? And believe what you're going to do. Wrong. Do not take that approach to real estate. If you do that, you're going to be listening to the seller's vision and the broker's vision. I initially was looking at real estate the wrong way. I had partners that probably took advantage of that, right? And you quickly learn, wait, this is a game where you ignore everything the seller and the broker's telling you because they don't represent you. And you look at the numbers. You have to know how to read these financial statements. And also understand what a pro forma means, right? And especially if they're giving, stabilized values, you can't just be like, oh, okay, this is going to be X cap rate. So yeah, that was a lot of your question about knowledge. It was a lot of learning by mistakes. When your own money's on the line, you pay a hell of a lot more attention than you do when you're reading a textbook or you're listening to a podcast. Just go out there, do it, make some mistakes, and as a result of that, you will force yourself to learn, drinking from the fire hose, as they say.
It's a beautiful idea, a beautiful concept. And you had the fortunate part of being able to actually invest. Many, you have a lot of people who want to get into real estate, can't do that. But I love the way that you paved your way into real estate. I love the way you described it. And I saw it from the other side, by the way. I'm a real estate guy when I came to tech and got interested in startups. And everybody in the startup world is telling me, listen, there, it's not like in real estate where everything is set, where you have an asset, when you have, you know, we have a cap, you have NOI, you have, you know, after what's the debt service, what's everything, what's coming in, what's coming out. Everything's unknown. Everything's unknown. You have to understand how to live with that. So I hear what you're saying coming from that side to this side. It's very interesting. But here we go. And there comes the interesting part. How Zane takes the real estate and the tech and brings them together in your career. And that's what gets us to where we are right before Bluefield Capital and post Bluefield Capital, meaning while you were in there. Tell us a little bit about that journey and about the pivoting.
So I was quite disheartened to realize that despite the fact that I am the sole owner of these properties and I'm doing so much work talking to vendors and you know, collecting rents and adding value, how is it that my returns still don't compare to some of the funds I've invested in? At the beginning, I didn't want to invest in third-party sponsors and GPs because you're paying them acquisition fees, you're paying them a carry, you're paying them management fees. I mean, there's a lot of fees they take. Yet net to me, objectively speaking, me working my tail end off, doing real estate directly, still didn't produce the type of results that I was getting from people I'm giving fees to. And I couldn't accept that. And it was a shock. And I realized, you know what? I can see now why it's worth paying these people. And I looked at it and I realized they have relationships I don't have. They have experience. They have reputation. They have access to, despite my balance sheet, they have access to capital that I still don't have access to, right? And I just couldn't compete with that. And I thought to myself, you know what? I need to team up with one of these guys. And that's how I joined Bluefield. I was really impressed with their returns, with all the things they had. But what they lacked was technology. And I was just surprised. I just didn't understand. How are you able to produce so many returns with very little technology? Business run on Excel spreadsheet, you know, and maybe the best innovation they did was Dropbox, but come on, that's a joke really, right? Like that's how you run your technology. So initially I thought, okay, why don't I join in and just start building technology and try to build like a Blackstone? You know, I was fascinated with Blackstone because they acquired my last company. I thought, okay, maybe I go out and I hire a data science team and we hire engineers and we figure out how to add value. And I quickly realized that's never going to work. And why? The reason it's going to work is because Bluefield's portfolio base is too diversified. Too many different asset types across too many different locations. I felt that it makes sense to have, let's call it a data science or engineering team, if you have really clear concentration in terms of one or two locations and you are the expert in that asset class. Like I've seen funds that built technology where they just buy single family rentals, for example, in a specific area. And then they reverse engineer the whole process. And they bring BPR in, you know, business process automation and reengineering, where they will figure out how to use automation to cut labor costs, to cut administration costs, and, you know, to help with deal identification. I couldn't do any of that. It was just too many different assets across too many different verticals and locations. So then I decided, okay, instead I need to find startups. You know, we've got a hotel here. We got a couple of apartments in this part of the US. We got a construction project there. Let me find a startup that is really good at helping the hotel increase revenues, at helping the multifamily apartment, you know, collect rents and improve our NOI. And that's how I started working with startups. And that's when I realized, you know what? Wow, I got a big portfolio here. I mean, I'll be frank with you, if I may, right? We could bring so much traction to some of these startups, we'd become a major customer. Potentially so much traction that we could make the, you know, seed round or series A round happen, right? Thought to myself, I want a piece of these startups. If I'm going to do business with them, if I'm going to bring them access to thousands of units and you know, take on so much risk to be an early customer, I want a piece of the company. And startups are willing to give me a piece of the company. They were offering advisory shares. And I can't really take advisory shares because that's a conflict of interest, right? So I thought, okay, let me set up a vehicle. And then I thought, okay, yeah, let's set up a venture capital fund. Let's just set up a VC fund and let's invest in prop tech startups that can impact our real estate portfolio. And that was a great decision. And you know, you know, not every startup is going to impact your real estate portfolio, but we've implemented technology throughout, and it's given us an edge. And that's how Bluefield Capital, you know, launched its VC fund, and that's one of the things I created there.
I love the idea. I want to ask you a question: is Bluefield Capital a GP? The general, they're sponsors.
Yeah, Bluefield Capital is a private equity fund. We have multiple real estate funds, and we have a venture capital fund. To be specific, we have about 11 or 12 funds.
Got it. I have a reason why I'm asking. But on the real estate side, they are the asset manager on most of them?
The asset manager, yeah.
Asset manager. I'm assuming with the diversification that they have with the different asset classes and locations, I'm assuming they take third-party management companies. Because that's the way you could function. Otherwise, you can't. And you had this brilliant idea, which usually people come from the other side. You came and said, okay, I need, you know, the tech to be tested, meaning to be serving my real estate. That's how you came in. And all of a sudden, the tech that came to serve the real estate, all of a sudden you saw that these guys are coming in with all this new innovation, because there's almost no innovation nowadays, especially a few years ago, that were advanced enough to really serve a real estate. They were mostly a beta. For the most part. And you came and said, it's brilliant. You came and said, okay, these guys are using us as a beta. Why don't I join in and be a part of their journey? I love that. Yeah. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal idea. Tell us a little bit about the different asset classes that, before I go back to the tech, I just want to ask that question. For Bluefield Capital, in terms of the real estate, what type of asset classes are they investing, sizes, and what's their investing strategy?
I would say our typical acquisition now at the lowest is $10 million purchase price, all the way up to maybe $70, $80 million purchase price. So that type of range. We had identified that range as an area which is perhaps a little bit too big for institutional capital to play in, but it's a level where it's a little bit too big for your mom and pop operators, you know, who are buying $5 million to $10 million assets.
Right.
And so we operate in that area in terms of deal size. And of course, if you do the math, if you're getting like a 70% mortgage, you know, a $50 million or an $80 million acquisition only requires $10, $20 million of capital, right? And so we would raise that capital from LPs in the traditional sense, and then we'd get a bank to come in and provide the debt. And if it's construction, then it's not a bank necessarily. It might be, you know, a different type of a debt lender. We have focused a lot on income producing assets. We don't like to do deep value add. We're all lazy. I mean, let's be frank, right? Ideally, you can always find a deal that's been mispriced or has bad management.
Right.
We're going to do deep value add. We don't like to do it, but you know, if there is going to be deep value add component, we have to look at where the market is. At some points, it's cheaper just to do ground up construction, which is what we like. It's, you know, brand new, high quality. But you know, when the construction and labor market started and material market started to sort of go the other way, there was a point in time where it's like, okay, let's do a couple more, you know, renovations and value adds. But value add on the construction side or deep value add is dangerous because, you know, if you buy a building, you don't know what you're dealing with, right? The plumbing issues, the AC issues, the structural issues, you know, what you suddenly thought was
a permit issues. You can have a stop order and then what?
Right. And on the forecasting side, your entire, you see, your entire returns are sort of dependent on your vendor relationships and your ability to do really good inspections. Because if you have a $2 million capex budget and you realize this is a $4 million capex, could kill the deal. Instead, if you're looking at something like, okay, the rents are under market, there's really terrible management. We visited the property as potential tenants. There was no one there to answer our phone calls. Comparable units are at 100% or 90% occupancy, right? Okay, this is really easy math. Like, you know, we're producing what units people live in. We can just increase the rents and, you know, we can bring in better management. And that is sometimes one of the easiest ways to add value. So yeah, we like to do that. Now that's just apartments. We also partner with management companies we really like in other verticals, so senior care facilities or hotels. We really like sort of the select, type of hotels, like, you know, the Marriott Courtyards, the Hilton Garden Inns. We've developed a lot of those. We used
developed,
to have...
you're saying developed, developed, you mean construction wise? Or
no,
or renovation or just acquisitions?
More acquisitions. But when I say develop, we did look at doing conversions, some multifamily to hotels, but that opportunity didn't last very long.
COVID, yeah.
Exactly. People looked at hotels and we bought a few hotels and we thought, what a bargain. But then brokers were like, hey, let's pitch this as a multifamily conversion. And suddenly, like, you're paying outrageous amounts per, you know, RevPAR or per unit or whatever.
Right.
Per key, sorry. So we've been doing a lot of that. But the point I'm trying to make is when we have a good partner we've worked with and they've managed hotels for us and done a really good job, we rely on them to help underwrite. And that's really our key. We like to partner with other providers. Really, that's sort of what the
game is. So it's a business model. So if I understand correctly, it's a business model that is a mix of being your own operators as well as co-GP with others and finding the right operating agreements with the right people.
I wouldn't say operators. Really, I would say the secret sauce really is just having lots of relationships. So we find a way to identify deals, which means you need good broker relationships. You need
broker relationships. Okay, I got it.
Or you need direct relationships with sellers, right? So you have that. That's one way you've now, you know, provided value. The next thing is you have good access to capital. That's on the LP side and also on the debt side. So now you can go raise money to get that deal done. And as a result, if you can be, if you're good at that, you can, you know, you can make all cash offers or you can get discounts because, you know, you're a reliable partner. You're not some, you know, random mom and pop operator. You're a firm that has a portfolio. Then you bring in the right management company that you know, right? And you make sure the deal you're bringing in doesn't require you to do heavy construction. At least that's where our mindset is now. If it's going to be construction, it's a completely different game and we have different vendors for that, right?
Yes.
Frankly, that's it. You get a good management company in and now, you know,
you're flying high. Let's move to the other side, your side, the tech side, the prop tech side. What type of prop? Because prop tech today is huge. It's huge. A lot of people are investing in prop tech. A lot of VCs. A lot of the movement there is just endless. And there are many within the prop tech industry. You have so many sectors, from the construction tech to the property management, to AI to big data to you name it, blockchain. Tell us a little bit about you guys. What is your interest and where you guys are going with the what you invested in, where you want to go, where you see the future, your approach.
Yeah, there's many overlays when you analyze the prop tech industry. The way we looked at it initially was, let's look at our portfolio. We have hotels, we have senior care facilities, we have a bit of land, we have multifamily. Let's invest in areas like this. But then you need to be specific. Okay, now you've identified asset classes. Within those asset classes, what are the core functions? So for a multifamily apartment, it might be deal identification. How do you find more deals you can buy, right? How do you do a smoother job with raising capital? Then how do you push technology as an amenity, right? It could be security cameras. It could be mobile apps that provide concierge-like services, rent collection, whatever it is. And then you also look at, eventually, I need to sell this asset. So we looked at sort of the different functions within each asset, and then we tried to make investments that we can push through our portfolio like that.
Okay, so you look at basically what type of service can be provided to your assets, right, to your properties, and then you say, okay, which one fits best? But what I want to dig in is into the innovation. And here's what I'm, and that's your head. That's your expertise already. That's where you come from. Tech has a certain future, just like, automatic cars, whatever it's called, cars that are going to be going on their own. Forget the terminology. But anyways, just like that, you have real estate that is going to be revolutionizing the the industry. And right. The big question is, what type of prop tech technology, of prop tech, is going to actually go forward and become that dominant aspect in the real estate sector that the valuation is going to boom and actually change and revolutionize the entire industry? Where do you think it is within the prop tech industry?
You know, there are a lot of opportunities, and to get a big outcome is dependent on your entry price and your exit price, right?
Always. So,
I, as an angel investor, I invested in Boxable, which has gone on to become one of my biggest, you know, returns ever as an investor. And that's basically prefab modular homes produced in a factory. That's a trend that is very interesting because that's the future of housing, and being able to produce houses like you produce cars is really cool. But it also comes with high risk, you know, when you have such an outlandish idea. Then there are ideas that are pure software based, where you're providing value to your tenants. So one of our, you know, really strong companies is Poplar Homes. Poplar Homes is basically a tech-enabled management company. We looked at management companies and we never trusted management companies. We always felt like, you know, they were focused on revenue but not on cost and NOI. And they were lazy. They didn't want to do much. And so we identified a company that was trying to be their own management company, and they implemented tech everywhere. They'd have chatbots to talk to, you know, tenants. They would have really smart, like, access control where tenants can do their own, you know, self-guided tours of an apartment. We invested in them, and their model was brilliant. It's in some ways a very boring business, right? What they've done now is they're operating at crazy high gross margins, and they're buying up traditional management companies. And they've bought at least 10 management companies, right? They've actually bought traditional management companies. They've rolled them in. And basically, you can cut staff, you can implement technology, you can improve your gross margins, and they're growing through acquisition. Now, there's another company that, you know, we think could IPO in a couple of years and become a multi-billion-dollar outcome, right? That's just a traditional business powered by technology. Very different to that hardware crazy idea, right? And then on another spectrum, you have, like, one company we invested in called Stake.rent. Stake is basically trying to be a neobank for renters. So it doesn't quite, like, that doesn't relate to our portfolio. Well, actually, we thought, you know what? If there were a way that we could provide banking services to America's tenants, a lot of these renters are unbankable today. They don't have good credit scores. Right. And Stake came in and they've created this whole banking concept, and they're now growing like crazy. They just raised, I forget how much, 12 or 20 million recently. We were part of that round. That company is going to, we think, will be another unicorn too. And then, you know, even like in the future, we think the blockchain presents really interesting opportunities for real estate. We've spent a lot of time, we've invested, we're probably one of the most active investors in Web3 blockchain prop tech. There's many use cases. The use case I'm most excited about is real estate going on blockchain. And, you know, there's a regulatory framework called security tokenization. And as real estate projects are tokenized on the blockchain, that's going to allow people to trade real estate like you trade stocks. That concept is crazy that it doesn't exist today.
That's a conversation for our conversation from before. To be continued, I love the concept. I love the idea. And you're a phenomenal type of a person because where you came from, the journey you went through, and the sectors that you jumped from one to another, and you actually learned it, you know, you studied them, each and every one of them, and you became an expert. And now you're taking it to another level by being in the Bluefield Capital and actually taking the whole concept of prop tech forward. I love that. And you guys, by the way, that are listening, I hope you guys are learning something because there's so much to learn from Zane here. And if you want to do even a little more, you see the links above and below. You can go on the website and see the portfolio and follow them. And I have one question for you. Before you tell us where people can find you and we say our goodbyes, just tell us, for people who have startups out there, good ideas, and you're a pre-seed type of company, what is your business model in terms of, as a VC, to invest in them, meaning what are you guys looking for? Who is welcome to come and show you products? What type of level, what type of of capital you guys are looking into deploying?
Yeah, we invest in startups that obviously are in the prop tech sector, and we like to focus on the seed stage. We sometimes do pre-seed as well. When we look at deals, it's usually always about the team and then the market size. So is this a world-class team and are they targeting a big enough market? Usually if those two things are solved for, everything else eventually figures itself out. You can't try to look at startups like you look at real estate. You know, you really are
betting
on the potential market size. We will invest anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million, depending on the, you know, company and the stage they're at.
All right, you guys heard it. I hope you guys learned so much from Zane. Thank you so much for being with us. Tell everybody, please, how they can find you guys, whether it's LinkedIn or the website. Go ahead.
I run a newsletter called proptechvc.com. I only send out the newsletter probably once a quarter at most because, you know, it's time consuming. I'm going to get busy. But zane@proptechvc.com is the email address for me, and I occasionally check that. Or you can reach me on Twitter as well. The handle is Zane Jaffer, and you can put the links above and below, like you said.
So you're saying the best way is Twitter or LinkedIn?
Email zane@proptechvc.com.
Zane@proptech. Okay, no problem. Proptechvc.com. You guys heard it. You guys now are able to contact Zane directly. Zane, thank you so much for being with us. I really love that conversation. Thank you so much. Thank you. Stick around. And while I tell everybody, I hope you guys enjoyed this, and I'm going to see you in the next show. Take care, you guys. Hey, guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.